Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we appreciate same. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Guy, crazy weekend from the LSU Fighting Tigers winning the College World Series to bombing nuclear capabilities in Iran. And, I mean, things are moving fast. Markets are reacting. What do you see out there?
Yeah, it's interesting, and it was a bizarre weekend. So you're watching LSU baseball and then getting news updates that we bombed a nuclear facility in Iran. I think the most interesting thing is the global calm. You know, you would expect a bigger response, and stock markets around the world are very calm. Stock market in the U.S. is calm. The oil price went up initially and then has fallen back down. And there's almost a feeling of, well, we knew this was coming, and finally it's done, so we can heave a sigh of relief. I'm not sure where things go next. The challenge is Iran has to decide what they want to do. And, you know, anytime you have a negotiation or a situation like this, the other side does have a choice in their response. And I know they've launched some missiles toward our base in Qatar. I don't know that Iran is in a position to want to start a wider war, but you also don't know what's on their minds. Behavioral economists have found that for some people, the desire for revenge is so strong that they'll burn down the house in order to get revenge, even though it hurts them as well. So we have to wait and see, but right now we're seeing really a calm market, calm oil market, calm stock market, and I think people are just waiting to see if the other shoe drops or if you just get a small reaction from Iran, and then we go on with business as usual.
Yeah, you know, that revenge thing is a behavioral characteristic that's foreign to me. It's not something that's, you know, that I've ever engaged in. So it's interesting. But you're right. People will put everything that they've ever worked for their entire life at risk for revenge.
Yeah, and we saw that. We had two partners. Two guys had a great relationship. One of them died. Well, after he died, his widow found out that he'd been having an affair. And she was so mad at her deceased husband that any time his partner wanted to do anything in the business, she just voted no. And the partnership agreement said the moves had to be unanimous. She wouldn't renew a lease. She wouldn't approve a bid. She wouldn't approve anything. And he kept saying, this is your only big asset. You're killing the business. And she could care less because she was so mad at the betrayal that she just wanted to destroy the business, and she did. So you're right. I mean, it's a horrible motive. It doesn't lead to good outcomes, but some people get so wrapped up in it that it's hard for them to get away from revenge. And I'm hoping we don't see that in this situation, but it's entirely possible.
Well, they may have revealed their hand a little bit already, so it's going to be interesting to see. And it may have just been something to see how the U.S. was going to react. I don't know if it actually hit the U.S. airbase, but obviously they attempted to. I think they're in a diminished capacity where they're not the threat of their military actions that are going to be out there are not going to be nearly as strong as they possibly could have been 90 days ago. But we shall see. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the ultimate threat they have is close the Strait of Hormuz, and that's the cut-your-own-throat strategy, because that's how they ship their oil, too. And if they do that, they alienate the other Gulf states. They alienate China, India, and Japan, who use the oil that flows through that strait. So I think that's the that'll tell us if they're going to the total revenge strategy or not. And at this moment, they have not. Their parliament said, we're going to close it. The Republican Guard, which really runs the country, hasn't done anything. So we're just going to have to wait and see on that one.
For sure. So there's always this conversation. You and I have talked about it, about the death knell date for both Social Security and Medicare. Let's talk about that, and let's talk about what it really means.
Yeah, the date has been moved up. Social Security has an independent commission that looks at when the programs run out of money. And there are a number of different programs. There's the Social Security Fund, the Medicare Fund, the Retiree Disability Fund. But the two biggest are Social Security and Medicare. Those run out of money dates have been moved up to 2033. So, you know, that's not that far away. That's 8 years away. And what's happening is the demographics are turning against Social Security. In 1965, we had four people working for one retired. 2022, we had three people working for one retired. That ratio is going to continue to decline if the American workforce doesn't increase. And because our population growth is slowing, it's unlikely that the workforce is going to go up. And the other thing is Congress acts in a lot of different ways, but there was an act called the Social Security Fairness Act. And what it did is it readjusted Social Security for people that also had government pensions. Well, this actually had the effect of obviously increasing pensions for those folks, but it shrank the surplus for Social Security. So when Congress makes decisions, it does move the needle one way or the other. This moved it a little toward quicker, not insolvency, but running the funds to a pay-as-you-go basis. And what pay-as-you-go means is if nothing changes, Social Security benefits will decline to somewhere between 77 and 80% of what they are right now. And then they will gradually diminish over time. You know, there won't be inflation adjustments up. There will be slight decreases as the population ages and the workforce shrinks. The Medicare payments would shrink to about 89%. So what this means is, absent action, we're facing 77 to 80% payment on Social Security and 89% on Medicare. And this is something that people are beginning to pay attention to. The folks in Washington, not yet. But it is much easier to solve if you start now than if you wait till the day before. And at the moment, we're sort of looking like we're going to wait until the day before.
But can we do it on the day before?
Not very well. It's interesting. I'm not usually recommending books on the show, but I just finished reading The First Gentleman. It's written by James Patterson and Bill Clinton. And the premise of the book is that the president's husband is falsely indicted for murder while she's simultaneously working on a grand bargain to solve the entitlement problem and get American deficits back under control. It's sort of funny because Bill Clinton is the co-author, and the last time we had a balanced budget, he was president. So they suggest some solutions, and they're the ones you and I've talked about. Raise the retirement age gradually, raise the compensation base for Social Security, change the indexing a little bit. All these things would work. They would work much better if you start now. It's like saving for retirement. It's a whole lot better when you start when you're 20 than 50, and considerably better than if you wait until you're 60. And so I think what Bill Clinton's trying to do is A, sell a book, but B, sort of stimulate a national conversation and get people to start talking about this. So I hope that'll work.
Let me back up and try to clear one thing in my mind, and maybe my question was not well-founded. So as we approach this date, does it mean that we would have to make some kind of cash infusion into this trust fund?
Well, the way it works right now is if we do nothing and you know, both the Democrats and Republicans at times have said, look, we're not going to touch Social Security. What that means is you do nothing. You're not touching it. You're not adding to it. You're not subtracting. On this day in 2033, if you're getting a check for $1,000 a month in retirement, your check will become $800. Social Security will be a pay-as-you-go plan. The following year, your payment will probably go down a little bit, maybe to $798, and it will just gradually decline over time. So it doesn't mean you won't get a payment. It just means you will get a smaller payment, and that's if we don't change the current law, if we don't make a payment. But no, the Treasury's not obligated to fully fund Social Security. The law says that the payments come from the Social Security Trust Fund, and whatever that generates, that's what you get. So what it means is not zero. And I know people say, well, Social Security is going broke, I'm going to get nothing. No, you're not going to get nothing. You're going to get less. So if nothing passes, if you have gridlock in Washington, your $1,000 a month check becomes an $800 check starting in 2033.
Now let's flip to Medicare. Medicare, same, some of the same principles, but not completely. But the same date, 2033, which is actually 3 years earlier than previously estimated.
Yeah, Medicare is going, it is accelerating its decline for a couple of reasons. One is medical costs are going up more rapidly than we expected. I'm saying we, than the U.S. Congress expected. That is a bigger challenge because if you talk to any hospital exec or someone running a medical operation, they'll tell you, look, we're operating on thin margins. We have little or no flexibility. So Medicare would not be able to pay for all of the treatment that people want. And I have a good friend who's a pediatrician. He said, you know, we're reaching the stage where we can provide, meaning doctors, more beneficial care than people can afford to pay for. And this would happen nationally. And you see this in systems like the British healthcare. You'd end up with rationing in forms of longer delays. You'd wait longer for treatment. You'd have fewer people that would accept Medicare as payment. And so the program would still go on, but it would be harder to access. And certain procedures like knee operations might be extended, you know, months, and in some cases maybe into years because there's just not enough money to pay for all the things that are needed. It's hard to imagine politically that we would sit still for that. You know, we don't have the patience to stand in line that, like the British do. So I think there'd have to be some sort of adjustment before that occurs. But if current law prevails, that's what would happen.
Well, most of the socialized medicine programs that exist around the world, they all have this long waiting period experience, right?
Yeah, not all of them, but many do. And probably the program in the UK is the worst right now. It's National Health Service used to be the crown gem, and now it is really plagued by very long delays. And something that, once again, Americans would have a hard time sitting still for. At a certain age, they just say, look, you need a new hip, but you're too old, so tough luck, we're not doing it. And that's a real challenge for patients on the receiving end. Yeah,
putting 30-year hips in a 85-year-old.
Yeah.
That makes no sense either, right? Where they have 15-year hips that are a lot cheaper.
Yeah, there's some logic to that. I'll leave those decisions to the medical professionals. But if I'm a healthy 80 or 85-year-old and a hip will let me walk instead of sit in a wheelchair, I'm looking for a hip, whether it's a 15-year or a 30. I think I'd take a 15-year hip if I'm 85. Should probably work out okay.
It's a pretty good bet, for sure. We'll be right back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, on the Medicare front, a lot of folks, you got a lot of texts coming in, you know, about both Social Security and Medicare. I got to imagine as we get closer and closer to this date, the rhetoric, the angst, the anxiety is going to increase. Do you suspect that Congress actually waits till the very last moment? You've got people that are living paycheck to paycheck on Social Security, and if they take $100, it'll decimate them.
No, you're exactly right. The buy now, pay app, eat now, pay later app. People are actually financing meals and groceries. So there's a portion of the public that is already at the point where even something like a fast food meal is being paid in a few payments. So this is a big problem. And I think it will get addressed. Once again, I think, Bill Clinton wrote his book with the idea of stimulating the conversation. You know, good for him. The book isn't particularly well written, but the problem is real. And I hope that we'll look at, there are countries that make this work. There are a lot of countries around the world that have some form of socialized medicine. And I mean, we do too. Our medicine is somewhat socialized at the moment because of the payments the government makes. But if you look at places like Norway, Israel, Austria, Germany, people are relatively happy with their plans. Some are hybrid plans. Some are, more state-controlled where the state owns all the hospitals. There's a lot of inefficiency. We spend more than Germany spends as a percent of GDP on health care. We spend about 12%. They spend about 8%, and they get better health outcomes. So I think one of the things that I wish Congress and the president would do is say, let's look around the world and see what's working, who has the best plan, and then let's pick the best elements and bring that before Congress. And look, let's vote on doing something that works, because there are a lot of countries that have wrestled with this, some successfully, some not so much. You know, our friends in Canada have a system that people are fairly happy with. It's not perfect. It does have some long delays for what they call optional procedures. But there is room for improvement. I think it'll definitely happen when the run out occurs in a president's term. You know, it won't occur in President Trump's term. It won't occur in whoever succeeds President Trump. But whoever's next will definitely face it. So I think that's probably the point where it'll have to be addressed. But I'm not seeing any action right now to address it on either side of the aisle.
Yeah, and it's just hard for me to imagine. It's almost as though they're playing a numbers game as to who's actually going to be in office, right? Because they can make a big political brouhaha over this at some point in time. And the same thing with, just letting that kind of that deadline date pass and have, I guess they're mandatory imposed reductions, correct?
Yeah, the law stipulates what happens, and that's what the Social Security trustees keep saying. This report came out 5 days ago, and they said, if nothing changes, if we touch nothing, the law requires that we drop payments somewhere between 77% to 80%, and they just wanted people to know they're doing their job and counting the cost. And they're hoping against hope that Congress and the president will look at this and say, well, we really don't want to do that. why don't we gradually raise the retirement age? Why don't we raise the contribution limit that Social Security is taxed on? Why don't we look at the indexing formula? If you do those three things today, you could solve the problem. You know, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan came together and had a grand bargain that pushed the insolvency date out almost 30 years. So it's certainly doable. When they did the grand bargain, they thought that it would push it out to 2050, but obviously time has overtaken that. But I'd take a 30-year solution if we can get together right now and have something that would work.
Yeah, no doubt, for sure. This is going to be very interesting to follow. And as you pointed out, 2033 is 8 years away. You know, you have the rest of this Donald Trump term. He can't run for president again. So he's got, what, another 3 years here. So he'll be in office till 2028. So next person up is faced with this, right? I mean, it's either a re-election year, if you decide to run again or not.
Yeah, and whoever that person is, they would obviously, that would be a big issue in the re-election campaign. And if they wait until then, it's certainly much more expensive. I mean, it's the same, it's that old retirement example we keep bringing up, but it's the most relevant. If you wait to save for retirement till you're very old, you really have to make drastic changes versus some small ones now. So I'm hopeful that we can get on to some reasonable changes more quickly rather than later, because it would really stabilize the U.S. economy and help the dollar, help everything going forward if we knew that we were addressing this.
So as we pivot to the Fed, the Federal Reserve, and relative to inflation, Donald Trump makes the observation the other day that, you know, if the Fed would reduce interest rates, we would be borrowing, meaning the U.S. would be borrowing money at a cheaper rate. Does that have an impact on either Social Security or Medicare?
It does have an impact, but not a big impact. When the trust fund was bigger, interest income from the trust fund accrued to the benefit of the fund. So you're actually earning interest on the saved money. But because it's shrinking so rapidly and there's so little money there, it's not really going to make a big difference. It's more important to the general economy. The challenge, and I know the president wants lower rates, and that's understandable. Every single sitting president, you know, from Harry Truman forward, has wanted lower rates. The long-term rate is not in the Fed's control. And the long-term rate, the 30-year rate, has actually gone up this year. Went up from 4.7 at the beginning of the year. It's 4.9 right now. That long-term rate is based upon the market's expectation of both inflation and government deficits. Now, inflation looks like it's in pretty good control. Government deficits are not. So you have to deal with both of those issues in order to get the long-term rate down. Now, the Fed can reduce the short-term rate, and they keep backing off and waiting. And they've said, look, we're just going to wait a little bit longer. The Fed believes, and traditional economists would tell you, tariffs increase inflation. What we're seeing is it hasn't happened yet. And there is a counter theory that if you only put tariffs of about 10%, no more than 20, that the exporters will absorb most of it. And then domestic consumers will switch and have preferences for domestic products over imported. So it won't be that inflationary. So the Fed still believes that tariffs are inflationary because that's traditional economic theory. And I sort of lean that way, too, but I'm beginning to soften up as the evidence is not coming in. So the Fed's saying we don't want to have to raise rates again, so we're just going to wait a little bit longer. And a little bit longer now, maybe September, maybe December.
And it's kind of hard to argue that point, though, right? I mean, the implementation of these tariffs it's not as cut and dry as a lot of people believe, correct?
No, and it's we don't have certainty yet. You know, we've gone back to we're looking at maybe just a 10% tariff on the UK. That actually wouldn't be awful, and I think that's very livable. If we end up in that range with everybody, and it's sort of one and done, and even Chairman Powell said once you set a rate and stop, it's a one-time shock, and then it's over. You deal with that, and then supply chains will adjust. So the confusion is, where do we end up with the tariffs? Where do we ultimately end up? And we don't know yet. And I wish we would resolve this quickly, hopefully in favor of a little more free and open trade, because I think that's ultimately beneficial to us. But the uncertainty is what's causing people to not know what to do. And it also delays planning, because you can't really plan on manufacturing plants, which are very expensive to build, if your cost is going to vary by 10, 20, or 30% based on tariffs. So we've got to resolve that in order to get a better picture. In the meantime, though, it looks like we're going to have very solid economic growth in the second quarter. Atlanta Fed's GDP now is projecting over 3% growth. So economy looks like it is remaining in good shape. Looks like inflation is trending down. So, you know, there are a lot of reasons to say, well, you know, things are all right. Just don't mess with it.
It's interesting how this breaks, right, with some folks predicting gloom and doom and really hadn't revealed itself yet.
Well, and, you know, one of my favorite bankers who really has done a phenomenal job is Jamie Dimon. And he really has done a wonderful job with J.P. Morgan Chase, but he's predicted a lot more recessions than have occurred. And this is going to happen. This bad thing's going to occur. We're going to have, you know, some people lean toward a negative viewpoint, and you just don't know. And I think we're at a stage of not really knowing for sure. The U.S. is remarkably fortunate in that we're energy independent, so, you know, oil prices, regardless of what happens, even if the Strait of Hormuz closes, we're not getting oil from there. China's getting oil from there, so is India and Japan, but we're not. Just a very little sliver comes to us. We still have a very vibrant economy. So we're in a position where the Fed can wait and see, we can carry on, and ideally we can settle the tariffs and then let people make rational plans, as well as get the tax bill through. Whatever ends up happening in it, that'll enable businesses and CFOs to make their plans for the next year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this unfold. And I mean, it's very dynamic, obviously, and ever changing. And I'm sure we will be talking more about this in the coming days for sure. When we come back, we're going to talk about the real estate mismatch between sellers and buyers. Fact is, too many sellers and what that means. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
With us. News sources are reporting that there was, in fact, a rocket attack on Qatar, and the American military forces, they say, shot down every Iranian missile, and there are no casualties. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, let's talk about the real estate mismatch that exists today.
Yeah, we're in a tough time. We actually see home ownership rates dropping, and that's a very unfortunate thing. Home ownership used to be 67.9 before COVID. It's now 65.1. And what has occurred is listings are going up. and they're taking longer to sell. This is a national average. Used to be 45 days. Now it's 51 days. And the trend is for the number of days on market to stay and go up month by month. The other thing is we now have 1 million houses for sale in America. This is the highest number of houses for sale since 2019. So we're seeing longer time on market, more properties for sale. Sellers are very reluctant to cut prices. Now, they're in deals that occur, sellers are having to cut prices, but the sellers remember the good times when rates were super low and their neighbor sold their house. And it's very hard because we all have a mental idea of what our house is worth. And it's difficult emotionally to get off of that. So right now we've got this mismatch of sellers wanting to hold on and remembering the good times. Buyers are also challenged because now with rates up, it is difficult to qualify. And you have, in addition to the higher payment because of higher interest rates, you also have the higher insurance cost. So it's pricing some buyers out of the market. So you really have a little bit of a standstill. Sellers don't want to make concessions, so the days on market are going up. Buyers can't really pay more, so they're sort of stuck. And the result is home ownership rates are declining across America.
So what impact will this have on the economy?
Well, it really is very negative. And the reason is there is never a time in your life when you'll spend more money than when you buy a house. First, obviously, is the home purchase. But what happens when you buy a house is suddenly you need new furniture because your old furniture doesn't really fit in the new house. It's not laid out the way your old house was. You need new drapes. You need new rugs. You need all kinds of things, lawn furniture. So when you buy a new house, you're suddenly in the market for everything. And it's great for the local economy. It's wonderful in an area that has new houses going up because people are making those trips to Home Depot and to, True Value Hardware, and they're really spending money when they buy a house. So when you see real estate slowing down, it does have an effect on the economy. The other thing that's tough is one of the great strengths of the U.S. economy used to be labor mobility. People would take a job and move across country. And I think you remember when we were younger, we had people in our neighborhoods that would be there for 2 or 3 years. And then typically in those days, the husband would get a job in another state and off they'd go. And then someone else would move in. And that flexibility was really good for the U.S. economy. Now we're not seeing that. People can't afford to buy the house in the place they want to go, or if they have a very low-rate mortgage, they really don't want to walk away from that, so they're more reluctant to leave. So there's some real negatives when you have a slow real estate market, not to mention the pain for the people that are involved in that and do that for a living.
Now, what has been the impact in the commercial markets? We just heard recently of some office building sales here in the city of New Orleans at incredibly low prices. You couldn't build half of that building for the number that they're selling for.
Oh, it's been devastating, particularly for commercial offices. And what's happened is commercial offices have been hit with an absolute perfect storm of bad news. Younger workers love working from home. The result of work from home is companies are restructuring their rental office space and saying, okay, if you're going to work from home and only come in 1 or 2 days, we don't need to give you a private office. We're going to have shared office space. So we don't need 5 floors in this building. We need 2. We need 3. We need 1.5. So demand is going down. Companies are choosing to rent less space. A lot of people, depending on the downtown, are saying, I just don't want to commute. I want to work closer to home. So office space is really in a distressed situation. And you're right, the sales in New Orleans are at deeply distressed prices. You cannot possibly build a new office building right now in New Orleans because there's just not enough demand. Yeah. and you'd never be able to cover the cost of construction.
What does that do to the rent factors? I mean, does that put that in a distressed place too? I mean, you know, purchasers buy these buildings for pennies on a dollar. They don't have to demand the rent to really, you know, make a decent return.
Yeah, and that it becomes a spiral downwards, which is unfortunate. The old Freeport MacMoran building was sold, yeah, I won't say pennies on the dollar, but close to that. So now they can afford to undercut other people's rent in a, you know, still a very attractive building. And, you know, Mrs. Benson bought the building across the street. She can do the same thing with that building. That building's only 22% occupied. So if she wants to fill it, they can reduce the price and fill the building. Now, if you're someone with an expiring lease at another building, suddenly you're competing against someone whose cost base is much lower. So this puts pressure on rental rates, and the pressure is all in the down direction. And no landlord wants to lose tenants, because once you do that, then your food court loses volume, your parking loses volume, and the building becomes a little unattractive. You know, one time I was in New York, and I happened to stay in a floor, and I was the only one on that floor. And even though I realized I'm in New York in a big building, it was actually scary. It's like, this is just weird and eerie. And some of the CBD offices are like that. You have an office suite on a floor where there's no one there, and it's very uncomfortable. I went to a meeting in one of the downtown offices, and there was no one else on the floor except us in a small conference room. And you just sort of were looking over your shoulder. So this is awkward and weird to have so few people there. And it was very uncomfortable.
Things are different for sure. We've run out of time. So sorry. Guy Williams, truly enjoy your time, your insight. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
We'll be right back, folks. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Hey, LSU wins. We'll also talk about Iran retaliating. We knew it would happen, but where do we go from here?
All right, Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Monday evening. We'll see you again in the morning.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.